viewing of that of that area, it's not uniform in the amount of charge. But I don't see that to be charged negatively and positively at the same time, because then you would have a need for balance and to issue.
Well, balance goes out the window when you start talking about some of the prodigious projections from the sun and those energy levels and the particles that are coming in. So, yeah, I think it can be clumpy. I don't think it has to be evenly distributed. I disagree. It's only my opinion.
So what is plasma?
Fourth state of matter.
In terms of the charges, how would you describe plasma in terms of the charges?
I would say it's one of the higher energies.
But would you say that plasma is electrically neutral something, say gas, in which all positive and negative charges, say from neutral atoms and negatively charged electrons and positively charged ions add up to zero?
Are you talking about the grand scale of the universe?
Going to it.
What did you say?
Yeah, I'm going to it.
Okay, well, where are you going with this? What is the point?
I'm trying to establish it first, that the grant is always negative, or is not.
That's a good question. I don't know if it's always negative. It depends on the conditions of your measurements, I would assume. But not sure. Maybe you know. I don't.
WS2N? Where is this?
I always thought the ground was neutral. And then if you had something above it, and that was ionized like a cloud, and I think became positively charged, then the ground would be, in relationship to that cloud, it would be negative. So it's, overall, it's positive and negative. It's both. I consider it neutral. Wesley?
Would we be able to compare electron flow to the fluid flow? If, let's say, we follow the thoughts of John Stanley, that we could have something that is less negative or more negative, but then we have a flow from one point in space to the second point in space to have a balance or equality, like in the river?
I'm not sure what you said, but yeah, I'd like to know what the ultimate goal is. Where's the finish line here? John, over to you.
Okay, that's what I was asking. But Wesley, we know if we take a plate and we remove one electron, it becomes more positive. Two electrons, more positive. We can keep making it more positive by, you know, removing electrons. Okay, but we haven't done anything with them yet. So, I don't know where you're going with this. What is the concept of what you're trying to develop here?
It is part of my investigation for the concept of electrostatic pump. That is pumping electrons from the flow, from the ground. Remember, we're touching the subject of inertia. And although the inertia is extremely small one, if you have a huge number of electrons, we should have more of inertia than a small number of electrons. What I'm trying also to establish is, could we have a lightning from negative to negative? Because one is less negative, one is more negative. That's your thoughts, at least the way that I understood it, John.
I say absolutely. Absolutely. Difference of potential between the negatives gets large enough.
Sure. Is that how would you then describe lightning is happening? We have a negatively charged cloud, and then we have a ground that is negative. That would consider to be a two plates of the capacitor, and then we would have a spark between negative and negative. Something is really unclear.
WS2. I want to be like a pentode in a tube or something. You know, you get the negative plate and the positive plate. You got all these grids and things in between, which is some, you know, partially negative, partially positive. You know, somewhere in between the two. You know, something that's just like more negative than the other one, but they could all be positive, right? Is that right, John?
Well, absolutely. And it's also how you want to treat what Wesley's calling negative. What is negative? You want to say negative is zero? Well, then okay. You always have to go from a positive to a zero condition. But if we were to take two wires, I don't care what you say. If we have a difference of potential, whether it's negative or positive, on those wires, you bring it up high enough, it is going to arc. My opinion.
Well, the ground has a zero voltage because there is no difference in the number of electrons along any point of that what we see as ground. So let's say we have a plate. The plate is 10 inches by the 10 inches. And when we measure the potential between any point of that plate that is grounded to the ground, we don't see the difference. But at the same time, the higher we put that plate, then, and we put a voltmeter on it, would we then see a difference of potential change?
I believe if you separate the plates in an oscillating fashion, I think you would see a raise and lower of the potential.
Sure. Okay, so are you saying, okay, we have a wire, now the wire has 10 inches of length, it's connected to the plate that is parallel to the ground, we measure the potential between the plate, any point of the plate, towards the ground, and then we see that it's a zero potential. Let's say we raise that plate to 100 meters above the ground level. Would you say then that we're going to have a difference of potential of this grounded plate?
Theoretically, yes. I believe.
Here is your concept of, my concept of electrostatic pump without adding any energy. The nature wants to balance the differences. So now, the electrons from the ground has to flow to the plate over this that 100 feet distance over that wire to equal that difference and energy.
Okay.
And we have a physical movement of electrons without adding any energy, just using the elevation. And because of that elevation, the plate will become more and more positive. And to Adrian?
Well, I know you're talking about this theoretical pump, but the way you're using your pump in your circuits, there is no pump continuity. There's no path. So useful, productive energy from this so-called pump of yours is not happening.
Well, so far I didn't go to this point. What I'm saying is you're raising the plate. Now, the plate, charge versus the cloud changes because it's closer to the cloud. At the same time, even though that the plate is charged, there is a stream of electrons that is going from the ground to the plate to have a balance, like in any capacitor, a transistor.
Is it merely collecting the electrons, or are they traversing the air gap? Question.
Paul, what do you think?
That I'm not sure of. I would have to think of that. But, you know, I don't agree with the pump theory.
You're going to take a big piece of metal, put it on top of a mountain, run a wire from that piece of metal all the way down to the ground, and in between the little light bulb inside, you know, between the wires, because you're saying that plate is going to become ionized in the atmosphere, and you're going to have free electron flow because that thing is more negative. You're going to run a current through this wire and through a light bulb and into the ground. Is that what you're saying, Wesley?
That is correct. I'm putting the voltmeter, or I'm trying to measure the electron flow per minute, per second, per whatever. And in the circuit, or let's say I want to measure the current, if there is a current flow, let's say I put somewhere on that wire, I'm going to put a device that would allow me to measure the flow of the electron. Or I could put the small light bulb. What I see, at least, when I'm physically moving the plate up, let's say, theoretically, I'm pulling it from the balloon that is very high up, very, very high up, close to the stratosphere, and I'm pulling it up and up and up. What I see that there is that the current flow on the wire.
I would think only if the plate became, you know, positive or negatively charged in relation to the Earth. And that's only going to happen, I would say, maybe if there's a breeze up there and it's going to be blowing electrons off that plate. I don't know. But, yeah, I guess if you could get the plate either negatively charged or positively charged somehow on top of a mountain or on a blimp somewhere, float, you know, and then run a wire from that all the way to the ground. If that becomes negatively charged, I would say you'd have a current going through the wire. Free energy. That's why I use a light bulb. You want to make it useful. If I look at a meter, that doesn't do anything. If I put a little radio in between or a light bulb, then it becomes useful. See, John, I figured out what he was going to do. I don't know if it would work. KC2WGB, WS2M.
Okay, Paul. Well, I know I have had two horizontal wires running for about 70, 80 feet on my property, and I measured a difference in potential between the two of them. I didn't separate them or bring them closer to see if it would change, but yeah, sure, you want to call that free electric? I don't know. I think there was another station in there, KC2WGB. Pick it up, sir.
Oh, it's WB2HRO, Miss Joe. And I've been listening talking about antennas. You can get a difference of potential, but that's just an electric electricity charge. The idea is to get the useful current out of it. It's a different story.
Katie, TCAP on the air, just saying hello, first time user.
Doran, it's just like a battery just starts to come
in. There's another station transmitting right now, stand by.
When cloud has a positive charge or something like that, gets, the potential gets high enough, then the spark jumps from one point to another. There's current for a moment, you know. I have a question about, you're talking about antennas earlier. I didn't have the PL tone in my radio at the time, and I was working on that. I have a question.
John, when we were talking, there was another station. Maybe we could finish up this subject and go to whatever you decide.
All right, very good. Your antenna question, I don't know if I'll be able to answer it. Go ahead. Let's see. Maybe somebody here will.
Something related to the what you were talking about. I have two situations. One here. I'm about to install a long wire on the roof of my apartment house with an antenna tuner, an STC-231. So I'm going to use, the company recommended using the fence that's around the parapet of the wall to for the ground. Or I was going to use, that's one question. The other is, you're talking, someone was talking about stake in the ground, and then you can have a long wire, and it will work fine with an antenna tuner.
Well, your stake in the ground is better than trying to go onto the vents in the roof, because many of the vents today, I don't know how old the structure is, but if it's the old bell and spigot, they've got lead joints, a lot of resistance between the pipe, the cast iron. Your best bet would be a ground rod and a good number six wire coming up to your station.
Yeah, but you think then it would work fine. The antenna tuner is going to be on the roof. The other installation is at my job site. Hopefully we get a place to, I work at the City College of New York. I do all the audio recording. And I reestablished amateur radio there, except we haven't gotten a room yet to install our equipment. We have $5,000 worth of equipment and have no place to install it. We might get a room this week temporarily, and thinking of running a long wire out the window. There I can put a stake in the ground. Would you think a stake in the ground is better than going to the radiator pipe with copper over?
It depends. When you, the hydronic system sometimes have different fittings that are not electrically strapped, so you may not have the continuity you think you have. You could take readings. You could take, milliohmmeters and test it out. But then again, to test it, you need a certified ground for one end at least. Where are you going to get that? That's another problem. So I think you're going to wind up experimenting, but I have faith in the ground rods. They are the best.
Go ahead.
I think the conversation that you were listening to was when Dick was talking about an N-fed, half-wave dipole, where the ground stake at the bottom of the antenna is the counterpoise, which is different than an electrical ground for lightning and things of that nature. And if you want a good electrical ground, then staking the ground is pretty much the only way to do it, and to do it well. John just said, trying to hook up, especially from the city of buildings, you don't get grounds on the water pipes. Actually, the electrical codes have changed that now require just to step a stake into the ground. So that's pretty much what I wanted to say. All right, John. KCWDK.
Thank you for that, Eric. All righty. All right. Yeah, I think most of that's going to be experimental, but it's going to be an adventure, that's for sure.
Yeah, here it's kind of difficult to get a stake in the ground. I'm on the sixth floor, and out the back is nothing but concrete. And if I put something, if I run a wire down the side of the building, somebody's going to cut it, like they keep cutting my my long wire that I put out the window. That's why I'm going to go to the roof. I'm waiting for the co-op individuals to let me do it. I sent them a letter with a diagram and everything. That's what I'm going to try. I was working quite well until an individual on the floor below kept cutting my wires. I had just about 60 feet of wire out the window, just hanging down. And I worked 30 countries with it, with a 10 with 940 and an STC tuner. I didn't do too bad, so I just hope this roof installation doesn't use as well. What I propose is that the coax goes up to the roof, the antenna tuner, which I bought a new one, is supposed to be good for outside. I also got about 100 plus feet of wire, and we're going to suspend it above the fence, the PVC pipe, every so many feet. And that's the antenna. The ground can either be the metal flashing on the building or the fence or vent pipe, but maybe all three, I don't know. Over.
Well, of course, usually in an older building, the cold water line is usually a sufficient ground, and the electrical system is usually tied to that and then grounded. On the roof, you may have trouble finding plumbing fixtures that are hard pipe, but it depends also if you have an elevator tower on the building. There's usually a ground system in there that you might be able to hit on the roof. You might be able to do something like that. But anything you do and anything you connect to, you're going to have to certify that in some way that that is sufficient ground, not to cause you troubles. But radiators, I don't like hooking up to radiation equipment.
Hey, let me interject here. What's the purpose of this ground that we're talking about?
Some kind of counterpoise to the long wire antenna.
Okay, as long as that's what we're talking about. You can create a half-wave dipole that in essence doesn't need a counterpoise in terms of ground. There are devices out there, if you look like MFJ EX Engineering, they sell a device called an artificial ground. And in essence what that does is it prevents you from having RF on the outside of your car, especially if you're keeping it unbalanced. There's a lot of different ways you can do it. I've done apartment buildings where we've actually taken the railing, even though it's an electrical ground, but we've been able to load up the railing and use it as an antenna. You know, if you could do a dipole as opposed to an N-fed device, where the N-fed device is creating an artificial counterpoise. If you're doing a real dipole, you don't need anything. I don't understand why you want to put the tuner upstairs where the tuner could be by the radio. Again, depends how you feed it, whether you're going to feed it N-fed, and you're going to put a loading coil there, and a capacitive hat on the end of it. There's a zillion different ways to do it. But as John says, you're going to be experimenting. You're going to be radiating a lot of energy in a lot of different directions. In the apartment building, sometimes it's a little bit problematic. But give it a whirl, we'll see what happens.
KDT, TAT on the air. How you doing, gentlemen? First time you...
wire that went out the window work on all bands. And I was working on ADC-10 before with that hunk of wire and the antenna tuner. So I'm hoping to do it the same. And I know about RF on the outside of the coax. You can put several turns, like 8 or 10 turns make a coil out of that. I haven't decided if that should be up at the roof or down here. I don't think it makes any difference. Do that. But the idea is it has to work on all bands, and everybody gives you a different story, so I guess that's true. But what do you think of this? A long wire, like 100 feet of wire, with the antenna tuner, and then something as a ground? Or would you just take two lengths of wire, like, say, 50 or 60 feet of wire on each side? But then that means it has to really be balanced. They have to go equal interference. Like, one might be nearer something that interferes with it, one may not. I don't know which way is better. Over.
Well, first of all, the balance you're going to make out of your coax making those 8 or 10 turns, that belongs at the antenna, not down below. You want that up above. So maybe Eric has some other things, but I think a simple dipole center fed will suffice for your situation. You just need a balance, and with the tuner, I think you'll be able to match it right up. Eric, do you have any other words?
Yeah, you could use a 2-to-1 balun or a 4-to-1 balun, a real balun. That way you don't run your coax as long as you want. You know, if you're able to hang the antenna, not lay it on the roof, you could put together something where you could just go and buy a 5RB, which gets you all the bands. And your antenna tuner will let you tune to whatever part of the band you want to operate. So, there's a lot of different ways you can approach it. You can even lay a counterpoise on the roof and have it right below your antenna. There's a whole different number of ways to do it. You look into the ARRR antenna book, it'll show you a bunch of stuff, or even, it goes to the antenna handbook, the expensive one, which is designed for the commercial world. But there's a lot of good information out there. And you can always make an antenna resonant, so it's just a matter of how you approach it, John.
But I was listening to you guys talk before about making any antenna work.
Well, like Eric said, you can make any antenna, no matter what the length, resonant. It's just a matter of cue and how much effort you want to put into it. But, yeah, you got a nice little project to work on. I don't know how much room you have or, you know, the pattern of your antenna, what you're looking to achieve, but I wouldn't make anything permanent until you get something that works and then take it from there.
I'm well aware of that. All right, so the most important information I got is the coil of wire for the preventing the RF from coming back is up top. I'll put that into my equation. The coax is going to go into the STC tuner, and then it'll go. The STC tuner is really designed for an unbalanced antenna because there's a ground lug, and then there's on top there's a place for the antenna wire. So. I'll see what I can do with counterpoise ground to the building. It's a steel frame building, and I know there's a lot of wire there. It's built in 1948, so it's old. You know what I mean?
Okay, 1948. All right. And I think you said it was six stories. That's enough height. Although the steel structure on the old buildings, if it's a brick building on a steel frame, white plane frame, they were not thoroughly grounded. But you may luck out and find some steel up there that is sufficiently grounded for your ground position. Your counterpoise, you can make that almost out of anything. But I don't know why you're not looking for a easier way, like with a center-fed dipole, might do better. But again, you're going to be experimenting, so you'll find out what you need.
It doesn't have to be a center-fed dipole. It could be a dipole with center-fed. And by the way, the counterpoise, in the case of the building, doesn't have to be an electrical ground. It just has to be the center path to your antenna tuner, that's all. So. a lot of different ways to go about it.
Yeah, I'm going to try it. So I just appreciate what you said, and hopefully we'll get this working in short order. And the one at work is going to be, I'll first try the radiator, which is the copper pipe, the hot water radiator, and then if that doesn't work, I'll throw the stake in the ground. Anyway, I'll let you guys carry on. I'll be on the side. WB2HRO.
Okay, very good. Wish you a lot of luck with that. It's good that you brought back some ham radio to a location. We need more participants, without a doubt.
It's been a ham for 51 years. 2 meters was crowded years ago. Now it's dead.
KE2EJ, go ahead, Eric. KE2WGB.
I just want to point out a little something based on the previous conversation you just had. My IoT would not work if it weren't for different potential, okay? It operates at minus 28,000 volts. And actually, I have a circuit in there that operates at 28,003 volts, which actually, the circuitry operates at 3 volts. So, the fact that something is negative is irrelevant. The difference of potential is one thing can be more negative than the other. If the one thing is more negative than the other is positive, it's relevant, okay? It's all relevant. It could be a negative and positive, even though it's got 28,000 volts. Negative. So, nature wants equilibrium. That's like between clouds. You can have one cloud that's at minus a million volts, and another cloud that's minus a million 200 volts. And if that's the case, you're going to have a difference in potential, and you have the opportunity for current to flow. So, you know, take it how you want.
Absolutely, Eric. I agree. That's what I was trying to let Wesley know, but he's working on a certain path. I don't know what it is, but I guess we'll find out.
And Dirk's here. Well, John, remember the conversation that we have had with Dick, and you both gentlemen agreed that inertia of the electrons is extremely, extremely small. But guess what? We have an ion thruster operation, and this is based on the physical mass movement. So the mechanism of the electrons in motion where charging an atom or molecule by adding or removing electrons, we can create a thrust. Shows that we can have extremely big mass, and with a long period of time, we could go to the speed of, say, 90,000 meters per second.
Oh, I'm not questioning that. Look, if you took a flashlight out into space, turned it on, I think it would start moving from photon emission. How fast? I don't think very fast, but if the battery was lasting long enough, it could get itself up to a fairly decent speed. But there's nothing new there. There's... Again, I don't know where you're going with it, but no matter what you do, there's no free lunch. So, don't understand.
Well, that would be just many other routes that I could go with. What I'm trying to say is that yes, we have a trade-off of extremely small acceleration, but eventually the huge mass could go to the extremely fast speed. We're talking about the ion thruster operation. But if you would just simulate the electron flow from the ground with the impulses, we might go to the situation at which we have a certain resonance, which also is present in our ion thruster, where the inertia will be magnified with the time. And to
explain. Well, the only thing wrong, in my opinion, you're talking about these electrons like they come out of the ground for free. To get them out of the ground, you have to provide a path, and you have to provide energy. So I don't understand what is good about that.
Good question. Maybe somebody knows. If we have an ion thruster operation, we have that engine that is moving the spacecraft, and with the time is giving it 200,000 miles per hour, which is extremely fast speed. And then how come they would be able to deliver enough of the fuel, which would be external gas mostly, for that operation to be proficient in the space? And to explain.
KC2WGB. Well, you could attain very high speeds with the Xeon engine where it's pulsing out. Okay. Problem is, the mass of the equipment you're trying to move and the amount of energy that you can get out of that gas and how much gas you can put in the device. If you could pack enough gas in that device and have it operate efficiently, you could attain a tremendous speed. You might even be able to get up to half the speed of light if you had enough volume of that gas. That's very possible, I believe. But you're not going to be able to do that for free. I mean, it's going to cost you to do that.
That's a good question. How do they deliver the electrostatic charge in space that would be sufficient enough to create the ion flow, and that would be no end to the battery? Is that being done by the nuclear force, or is that being done by using the solar batteries?
I think that's being done by a nuclear source. I'm not sure, but I think so.
Yeah, I got to dig into it. Honestly, I don't know. What I'm saying is, we can say that all of those revelations that I was talking about are simply not existent. Or we may say that there is a mechanism that makes those devices that use no battery, no power supply whatsoever, but only initiating impulse that makes the device working. So for the moment, we say that that might be something in it. There must be mechanism that is ruling with that. So what I'm trying to do is eventually investigate if there is any chance for that mechanism to exist. Back to you.
John? Okay. You have one issue. You're talking about circular motion, let's say. We take a small battery and we start a pulse on a coil, and now the current starts to flow. We remove the battery, we show it the connections. Yeah, it's going to travel for a couple of microseconds, but it has losses. So you have to devise something that has absolutely no loss. And you're talking about not only something without loss, you're talking about something that has gain. It's just hard to imagine something like that.
You're talking about perpetual motion. Know the answer to that. By the way, they did experiment with tethering in space, but the space that we're talking about is low Earth space, you know, 150 miles, 200 miles up. There's still a lot of material. And by the way, when people are going to power an ion, the energy that you collect from the tether ain't going to be enough. You know, you have to provide the motion, and that energy had to come from somewhere in the first place.
Absolutely, I agree with you guys. But one thing, I'm not talking about a perpetual motion, and I'm not talking about overunits per minute. I say that energy must come from somewhere and be utilized for our purpose and be used. So in other words, it's like you're trying to jump into the train that is in motion and gain by your motion that you're not paying for. So in all of my experiments or all of my thinking, it is like trying to utilize something that we don't have to pay for. So one of the things that we don't have to pay for is sunlight, the heat from the sunlight. We might not pay for the radiation that comes from the space. We may also not pay for the difference of potential between the earth and the ground. We also not paying for Schumann resonance. So whatever we take for it, those are the free energy sources. Although we might have nothing from it for now, those are the mechanisms that we don't pay for it. John.
Okay. Well, to use solar to heat up an ion engine or something like that is difficult because when we're traveling in space, we are reaching areas where there's not enough sunlight to do that. So, you know, that's just not going to happen. But if you have a machine that once you start it, it keeps running by itself. All right, so that's unity. Now you're saying no overunity. Okay. If this machine is not connected to a source, it's going to stop. So now we have to get a source. And the device has to be extremely low loss because you're talking about gathering sources that have very low energy to keep this device running. But even if you were to devise a way to gather this, glean some energy that's very weak, but enough to keep it running. So now, if we don't have overunity, we don't have anything we can do with this device. So now, if we're going to get overunity, because we need it to function, now we get it from free energy, like you say, how do we couple the amount of energy from the free sources to the device to equal its output plus its losses? That's difficult.
Let me give you an example of where it actually was. How did we get to the moon? We used the moon's gravity.
Done.
That's understood. I understand that completely. But that's not going to help Wesley with his problem.
No, it's not. But the point is that that celestial body exerts the force. The force is gravity. It's the source of energy. Nothing comes for free. You know, you actually had to get your vehicle to a point where moon's gravity exceeds the gravity of Earth. That took some energy to get there, you know?
Oh, I agree. And you are actually perturbing the moon by drawing that energy. Oh, yeah.
Well, the moon is getting further away all the time, isn't it?
That's what I hear. The same distance our fingernail grows in a year, that's how far it moves.
That energy is being used to create the tide, yeah?
Yes, it is. Without the moon, our tides would be a mess.
Well, at the moment, we wouldn't have tight. But the point is, you can't, you know, at least in this physical world, get something for nothing. Right? Yeah, there's other sources of energy that you could tap into, but there's sources of energy. It's just like people feel that, you know, well, hydrogen is a great way to go. It's non-polluting and all this stuff. But in the end, is it really, unless you're generating it from, say, solar energy, which is free, but it's also a limited source of energy because the sun's going to burn out one day. But the point of the matter is, there has yet to be something in the terms of energy that has gained. We haven't found that yet.
Okay. Let's say John closed his eyes and he has 100 watts of light bulb that is above his head. He closed his eye, it doesn't mean that this energy stopped to flow. And when John opens up his eyes, he sees the photons that come out from the light bulb that are used for him to see. That's one of the examples of how to couple to the energy. Now you have a tight. If you could use the energy of the tight, you're using a free energy. That means that energy comes from somewhere, you're just utilizing that energy. When you have a water flow in the river and you use it for Niagara Falls, that's how you create the energy. And you say nothing is for free. Well, that actually, after the initial cost and the maintenance, when you look at the equation of how much you lost and how much you gain, it's free energy entering fiat.
That's free energy at a cost. You know, there are those who believe that the more resistance that you put to the tide by extracting your energy from it, the faster the moon is going to move away. Whether or not that's true depends on the physicist you're talking about.
Well, the problem I have with using tides, which is very well known, not well done right now, but they are working on that. The problem is any interference we do with that, our intercoastals are going to be affected, the estuaries, life, that could wind up being a disaster. I don't think tides is the way to go, but, you know, they have to do more work on that. But yeah, Wes, any energy you can couple into your device is going to help you, but to be able to couple it in an efficient way to make something worthwhile is another, that's a whole other study. It's not easy to do. Otherwise, it would have been done. Everybody's looking to save money. But we don't know what's in the future. But free stuff, that's just that's going to be the mythology of the world in another couple of hundred years.
Now, you know, John, you can put plugs on your boat, and as the waves go by, you can use a linear generator to make electricity from that. That energy is lost, whether you collect it or not.
Yeah, but a floating boat doesn't interrupt or disturb the tidal flow. You know, rise and fall? Sure. They could put tide gates. Oh, sure, those would work. They do have tide gates in some areas, and they are generating electricity. How much, I don't know, but yeah, that works.
Actually, off the coast of England, they have these generators, which basically float. The floats bob up and down, and they drive a mechanical linkage with the generator. They make hundreds of kilowatts that way.
Aren't they doing something with the Thames and the flow of the Thames also?
I'm not sure what the state of that project is, because there's been a lot of argument for that. Whether or not they finished it or not, I don't know. I know that there has been some experiments where they, even in the East River, where they put basically a fan and the water, you know, with a turbine, with the water passing through it, it turns. so I don't know what the status of that is, but the floating bob, that's all over Europe and Northern Europe. It works. Whether or not it's really distracting, you know, because it's on the surface and you're not changing the tidal flow, they don't think of it as stealing energy from the source, rather than the floats are utilizing the energy that it's normally wasting, and it's not adding any additional load. Nobody's actually thinking anyway.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, they have one of those devices in the Gowanus Canal off of the Buttermilk Channel. I don't know if that's still working, but I know when they cleaned up the Buttermilk Channel there, the Gowanus Canal, rather, they had gotten that thing working, and they were getting some power out of it. But it all is a big experiment, and we're way behind the time, and I think the oil is running out faster than we're thinking.
Yeah, well, there's people that will argue with you about that. I mean, I'm talking to one guy here was just saying that the Earth naturally makes oil. It's not a biological, you know, it's not the remnants of biology from millions of years ago. I can't exactly agree with that. But, you know, the price of gas has dropped because the Texas shale, you know, fracking and high pressure removal has increased the amount of fossil fuel available. Whether or not that's a good thing economically, it's okay, but in the long term, I mean, it's just more pollutants sticking up in the air.
Yeah, messing around with the fracking, the only thing I have problems with that is with the aquifer. I don't know what it's doing to that, but so far, they seem to have a handle on it. They have a few places that are leaking, but they seem to be able to control that. But, yeah, the motions of the up and down of the waves and all that kind of thing, wave gates, all that, yeah, I don't think that would interfere too much with the natural process. But, look, we got to get into fusion energy, and I believe hydrogen. I know the difficulty with hydrogen is where do we get it from? All right, so like you say, we have to produce it either solar or maybe some of the solar salt generators that could produce it. I don't know if we could produce enough for America. So all these little patches, like they want to put up the windmills. All right, they want to put them out in the ocean, fine. If there's breeze out there, yeah, we'll get power from it. But that's not the answer to put those all over America. Imagine that in Manhattan. Never going to happen. But out west where they have the plains and the wind, they seem to work extremely well. So for them, that's an answer. For us, it's not. We need to look deeper and further, and I keep saying we need another Manhattan Project for power.
Well, you know, the biggest problem we have right now is NIMBY. Not my backyard. Wind energy is a good source. There's been some really nice proposals that we put wind turbines out in the middle of the ocean where it ain't bothering anybody. The wind's blowing all the time. But then again, what effect will that have? I mean, you're offering some resistance to wind. But then again, look at the weather we're having lately. Can the humid matter? Well, you can't say that. You know, it's the long-term effects that we're dealing with here. Problem with hydrogen is hydrogen is not an energy source. It's a carrier energy. You've got to get the energy from somewhere else. And one of the best sources of energy that we have is obviously the sun. We can collect all the photons we want, and it doesn't affect the age, you know, the rate at which the sun is burning out, whereas some of the other things that we can do couldn't have a physical effect.
Very true. Solar, especially the solar projects they're working on, some of these big solar farms, they seem to be getting a better handle. They do need more efficient solar panels, which they're working on that also. So we got a couple of solutions that may help with stopgap, but look, we're going to have to build more nuclear plants, without a doubt. And what is the issue? Why they don't use thorium? I don't know. I know that the rare earths that we can't mine because it brings in too much thorium is an issue. Well, if we mine the rare earths, we got the thorium, and we have enough thorium on this earth to outlast man.
Yeah, well, I'm not a fan of nuclear energy. Besides, most of the nuclear plants, we even build oil and gas-fired plants that produce 3 and 4 times as much energy as the nuclear plant does. The big problem with nuclear is there's not fusion, but fission. The biggest problem we have is really a bunch of waste. I mean, when we process the uranium, that becomes plutonium, step it into a breather, turn it back into a fissionable material. But you're still winding up with a lot of dead stuff that's radioactive for 1,500 years, and what the hell do you do with it?
Well, they would eliminate that problem if they had used thorium. For some reason, they don't want to use it, and it can never go critical. The worst thing that happened to the thorium, it'll shut itself down. So I don't know why they're not pursuing that. There's got to be some reason.
Pursuing what? I missed that.
I said the thorium, why they're not pursuing that. There is no waste problem. The wastes are minimal compared to what we're doing now. We're just heading for another disaster. We keep burying it. That's crazy.
Did you say thorium?
Yes.
Yeah, well, okay. There's a number of problems with that. I can actually give you the mathematics behind it. I forget which isotope it is. It's one quick. Thorium 23 is what we use for metal. 16 is basically. They basically produce gamma, and the half life is something like 3 days, those particular isotopes. Thorium is not as dense as uranium. You know, it's just it's way further down on the periodic table.
Yes, and the production level per gram is less, but then we could build larger cores. That's the answer. But for some reason, because the system we have now is something they know the design, they know how to do it, I think they just want to stick with it. But I don't agree with building more of these breeder reactors and things like that. No. But we should build thorium reactors, at least a couple of them. Let's see how they work. Everybody touts them. Why they're not doing it, I don't know.
Oh, I'm going to give you some answers.
There's something about it that I remember reading many years ago. Technology has changed and that. Thorium, there's some isotopes of cobalt. Actually, there's a couple of the thermonuclear generators on spacecraft are built around cobalt mining
elements, but you could use also a thorium that is resistant. The only thing is that you cannot make, anyhow, the nuclear material that could be used in the bombs. So, and also another thing is that this thing cannot blow, which is good. So the nuclear waste production is so minimal that almost is omittable. And for today, whatever we have on the Earth, creating as a side effect material that could be good for the nuclear bombs is one of the needs. Enter Xian.
Well, I disagree with that logic because we have enough nuclear weapons now and we have enough plutonium, weapons grade. We have too much of it. So I don't think we need to keep producing it or storing it. No, I don't think so. All right.
Well, I was actually stepping on Wesley a little bit, so...